So here we are. Thanks a lot, the organizers, Anu, for having us here. If you compare the title of this talk to what you find on the agenda, you will notice a slight difference. And I think I'm trying to do you a favor in order to put my talk closer in connection to what has been discussed here yesterday and today. I think we all sense some kind of, all this technology is quite interesting and it's exciting what could be done, what can be done in the future. But if I'm in the business today and I have to bring value to my customers, what's in there for me? What kind of business cases, I wouldn't call them business models, business cases are out there that have been proven and that are of interest here? I think some of them, some of you are in this role, and we wouldn't be here there if we were not taking up that message and trying to provide value to you in order to help you to do that. So there was this discussion about whether these technologies are just bells and whistles or whether we can consider them a sober and to some extent proven part of a modern publishing infrastructure. You will guess what position I'm going to advocate here, and so let's go through that. There was a colleague saying there's some kind of a corporate policy to start a talk by first introducing who you are, so I'm going to do that. I'm going to introduce you who we are. We are going to look at what semantic content enrichment is in the way that we see it, and then we go through a number of storytelling cases about where this pops up in cases where it really brings value to publishing clients, to you, and you can draw your conclusions from that, whether it's just bells and whistles, something you could do, or whether it's something proven and a sober infrastructure component of a modern workflow. So a few facts about ourselves. So we have been around for quite some time now, have grown both in terms of geographical distributions. Our headquarters is in Paris, and the team is about 60 people large. And we have been pretty narrow in our focus, in our interest. We have been doing content enrichment, or you might call it text mining, right from the beginning, and we do little around that. And this is about what we do. Much of our technology is patent protected, and we see ourselves as a software company. And you see a little bit of our activity here. There's quite some diversity in the number of and in the range of clients that we are working with. But you will note the big square rectangle here on the left, which accumulates quite a number of publishing clients with whom we are working today. On the basis of the methodologies that I'm going to present you today. So quite a number of these are here in the room, and there's more out there in the world that have made their decision about whether it's just bells and whistles. So semantic content enrichment. Yesterday there were a couple of questions. Yeah, so that sounds all very abstract. So what does it really mean? What are you doing? What is mining all about? We see here at the bottom a sentence that represents a fact that you might draw from a medical paper about an effect of the administration of a drug. And whatever all these methods are all about, they start by looking at the sentence and applying methodologies in order to analyze what is being said here. So first of all, some basic processing takes place, decomposing that into the tokens, into the grammatical information that is inside here. And then more complex processes build on that, identifying the grammatical functions and some semantic types of the parts of this phrase here. We go more complex in identifying that some of these entities not only figure in this sentence, but they have a relation one to another. And if you combine all that, if you add all that up, you may end up at some kind of an event of the type in this phrase here. You have information, namely that the administration of this drug has some unwanted effect. And we had earlier today this discussion about the semantic web versus text mining, and semantic web being represented as if you put all that into RDF, then this is semantic web. Of course, if we have arrived at this information, it's one small step to represent that in RDF. This is not my point. My point is what we do is we accumulate this information, and the format, how we push that out, is then another question. So why do we do that? What's the benefit of trying to analyze documents in this way? So let's look at the different use cases that can be associated with that. So we have our sentence again here in an unstructured way, as you would find them in a document. First of all, we identify the entities, and it is easily imaginable that even that case represents some value. So it is a reading enhancement, and it allows you to do with your text what has been called previously here in the audience in the presentation, faceted navigation, faceted search. So the text has accumulated structure already, and it's richer, it's easier to digest. We don't stop here. We represent the fact that this chemical structure here, this chemical substance, for instance, doesn't just represent a string, a chain of characters, but it's coming with additional information about the structure, about the molecular weight, about the toxicology, and things like that. So by linking this entity to reference information about that structure, the text is made richer again, knowledge is inserted. And then ultimately, this text is not an isolated document that is separated from all the rest of the world, but it implicitly is in relation to other documents from the same author, other reports about the same drug, and other articles about the same type of disease. And this linking, which represents a lot of value in the publishing world, can to some extent be automated. And the cases that I'm going to describe now move along this value from very simple to very elaborated. And the model is that they all represent cases that create value in publishing. It's not something that one could do. It's something that, if it is done properly, creates value. Another way to look at the results is we mentioned this faceted navigation, maybe a little bit small to digest here, but obviously this emphasizes again the point that just if we are able to identify the entities, then we can represent a document collection in a much richer way by representing, for instance, out here in the document collection, we find this and that many people, and we list them, and we have learned something before even opening the first document. And then last example in this spirit, we heard yesterday about mining tacit knowledge from large document collections. We here have the results of looking into the relation between different companies and what they do on the market over a large document collection. And the information that you look at here may not even be represented in one single document. It's the accumulation of information represented in many, many different documents that you see here combined in a graph. And just by looking at that, even if we hadn't known about Coley Pharmaceutical before, just by looking at that, we see that must be someone who really has a role to play in that market, being in some kind of a licensing relation both with Pfizer and with Merck and with Glaxo. So I better start looking at them, which would have perhaps escaped my knowledge if I had read just one of these documents. So let's look at about a number of these cases. I'm going to tell a few stories about what we have done for Thomson Scientific, for Springer Science and Business Media, and for a French publisher that I'm not sure you have heard of before, Edition Francis Lefebvre. There are more cases in the making, I cannot provide details about who precisely the client is and what we do there in detail, but I'm going to briefly at least mention them. So, easy case, the project that was called from the colleagues at Thomson, Rescuing Lost Data, they had a goal. They had, suddenly, they found themselves with a number of documents, with a large number of documents that they had newly acquired, and the task was to say, okay, these have to be represented in a way that is in accordance with the indexing guidelines at Thomson, and this has to be done quick. Obviously, indexing is no rocket science if you have time and money. The goal was to get a new product out based on these documents. The solution used the TAMIS software system Luxit, together with the combination of Thomson-specific taxonomies and taxonomies that we build on the fly for them. And as a result, what you get is this is how BIOSIS presents itself today to the user as part of the Thomson Scientific, let's say, offering. And the information that you have in the table down there has been automatically derived from the documents. So information about organisms and about geological times and about parts and structures of organisms, together with taxonomic information disambiguation, has been put in there, not because one could do it, but because it was a business requirement to do so. The project was completed in 5 months after the decision to go for it. And a quick calculation that the colleagues at Thomson had done before, if you take an industry standard like working 10 minutes in order to index a document, it is clear that doing that would have been completely out of question with traditional means. What they did instead is they were using a TAMIS-based workflow that proceeds with a rate of about 500 milliseconds per document on a scalable architecture. And what they found, which was originally not even part of the equation, is that having this process in place, they were able to do that again and again, adding a new type of entity and saying, oh, we've forgotten that at the last run, so let's do it. If we started on Thursday, we would have it on Monday, and this is it. And this completely changed the way in which they were able to index documents, and has been happily used by them in subsequent processes since then. Next project, semantic linking. So we are moving up this chain of, let's say, complexity. Here, I cannot think of a better witness to make that point than Thomas Mager, who originally was supposed to be here as well, but he just had a baby, so he's... sorry? Okay. So I'm quoting from a presentation he gave at a TAMIS event some time ago, where he motivated what semantic publishing is all about. So obviously, it's about enhancing the meaning and the value of electronic articles without spending too much manual effort in order to not just, again, pour la, but to drive usage, to attract customers, to attract users to the content. And what is done there is that across all the different science domains that are represented on the SpringerLink platform, we've put a method in place that, first of all, computes some kind of a semantic fingerprint of a document, which then serves as a basis in order to decide what is related content to a given piece of content that is on SpringerLink. And this is how you can play with that today on the SpringerLink platform. If you decide to take a closer look at a content item, you are by default represented across all different scientific fields with related content that is that can be assumed to be of interest for you once you have expressed interest in that document on the right. At the time when Thomas Mager presented the first outcome of the launch of this, he was pretty enthusiastic about the usage numbers, about the usage figures. So the system went live in July 2010, and from the first moment on, it was used by 9 million clients per month, and the usage has certainly increased since then. We would be interested to get newer usage figures that have been recorded since then, but already right after the launch of this system, our colleagues there were pretty happy and pretty satisfied with what they saw. Now, third case, maybe the most complex case that I'm going to present here, a project we did with a French publisher in legal information, Édition Francis Lefebvre, that they called Case Law in Numbers, or in French, Jurisprudence Chiffrée. Where, again, a clear business case is behind this activity. Édition Francis Lefebvre is a publisher who is putting out on the web access to all the sentences issued by French courts over the year. They do that in raw text format, so you just have the raw text, but it's very, very hard to digest the information because there are so much of it, and it's of a very complex nature. And what the colleagues there did was that they identified cases out of a large, large area of legal information where people would appreciate some aggregation of the information accomplished by automatic means. And they have identified a number of cases, a number of subfields of jurisprudence, namely labor law, damages, commercial rent, and alimony and child support. And what they had in mind was to take that document collection and create a whole new product out of it that represents a higher value, of course, with the benefit of being able to sell this information then for a higher value. And again, the same kind of approach has been taken. The same software is in place here with a project-specific way of analyzing the documents. And what they were able to do at the end was to take the full text collection and to put a database mask on top of it, just as if it had been manually indexed. So you suddenly have a way to navigate through full text that allows you to make requests about, I'm only interested in people of the age of between 30 and 40, or about a specific gender, about a specific profession, and limiting the cause of the accident and whatnot. And each of these have been semantically enriched into the document. We are not going to talk about the format here, be it RDF or whatever. It was not RDF in this case. But what came out of it is that suddenly the user is able to say, okay, I'm looking for accidents in the workplace. My client, for instance, is eligible for compensation, but how much will he get? And suddenly, by looking over a large number of documents, in this case only 125, this table here on the left, I hope you can see it, gives us a distribution about the compensation that French courts have attributed to people in these cases. And you see that it is very, very rare that people get a five-digit number, but apparently many of them, what do we have here? So four of them at least got almost €3,000 for this case. So this provides some orientation for a lawyer that would have been very hard to attain by manually scanning through the 125 documents. This is done, this is possible now on the fly, and it has enabled Édition Francis Lefebvre to push out a project on the market that was, again, something unthinkable by manual means. So we were told that there are 200,000 sentences in France per year. Again, let's apply these 10 minutes per document, which would have been 200 man months, completely out of question for our client here. The full text indexing obviously wouldn't suffice here. The number 42, what would that mean? Is it the age of the defendant or of the victim? Is it part of the street address? It has to be semantically disambiguated before you can use it in the way that I've just indicated, and this has been done in the project. Again, reprocessing is no longer an issue. It's an automatic process. Once they find that they would like to perform that on an additional question, the analysis component is enhanced, and a few days later you have the document set. The resulting project is, I think, what we can call disruptive. It's a distinguishing offer that Édition Francis Lefebvre was able to publish on the French market, and it's being closely watched by their competitors. So just very briefly, three additional use cases that I will not be able to go into detail. Something that may be an issue in your cases, in some of your processes as well. You have workflows that are very costly, but that are only relevant for a small part of your documents. But how do you, if the criterion, whether or not a document is relevant, how do you separate the one from the other? We are just finishing a project with a large STM publisher. We have been able to automate that process, which has a very clear and simple ROI. Before, they had to send all that to their indexing partner. Now they only send the documents to the indexing partner that really merit being manually indexed, and the ROI is absolutely clear. Second project here with a different STM publisher, semantically enriching documents in a specific content portal where users had made the experience that they don't find what they were using for. Again, something that is not just something that you could do, but that responds to a business case in this with this client here, and the same type of of the third case here. I'm not going to go into details here. Time is running up. I'm jumping here to the take-home messages. So there was discussion yesterday and in a way today about whether these things are mature enough in order to be not just interesting technology-wise and something to watch for years to come, but whether they are mature and whether they bring value today. I hope I have added a couple of elements to the discussion that they do bring value today. They are implemented on top of mature applications and are able to address different scenarios in different domains. They do, of course, require some investment in infrastructure and competencies. So it's a new type of competencies that may be required at the publishing houses that are using that, if it hasn't been done before. And ultimately, maybe adding one argument to this discussion about what significance, what meaning could open access have taking a look at these technologies. Obviously, if the raw content is open access and everyone has access to it, the significance of adding value to it with sophisticated methods increases. And mastering these technologies and being able to sensibly, to reasonably combine them can be an essential differentiating factor. And that was it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Stefan, especially for the real life examples and the business cases. Who in the audience would like to pose a question? I'll go there first. Yeah. No. Yeah? Please mention your name.
Can you hear me?
Oh,
yes, you can. Felix Sasaki. We met before, and I think you know where I'm coming from on this question. In the semantic linking use case, you mentioned the usage of metadata, the footprint of a document, which is then used for showing relevant other documents. Have you thought of standardized representation of that kind of metadata? For example, of reusing that for other purposes, purposes which are not part of the use case you're describing, but which might also be provided by a third party, which are not so closely integrated into that use case yet?
So the answer is, of course, yes, we have thought about that. But I would like to remind you that what I did here was a very, very down-to-earth message. What we do here is something we did on the request and for a client that has specific, let's say, goals. And if that, what you just mentioned, what makes perfect sense, is not part of their goals, we won't do that. Practically all these cases here are use cases where the drive came from the client saying, well, we have that problem. We cannot do that with other means. We need to someone that does this, what was it called, killer plumbing, in order to do that. But we know what we want and we know what we do not want. And the discourse to suggest them, well, you could also now connect that elsewhere, is in a different department. That's different cases. Here we have a business case with a fixed, let's say, budget. And we see our roles in fulfilling that and delivering value in this framework, and this is what we did. So, but I completely agree. There's much, much more than we could do, and the project is continuing. So we are building up on that now.
Only if it's very brief.
Yeah, very brief. There are also standardization efforts with business cases and clients in mind, and if we go to bring clients on the table. But I'll follow up later with you.
Okay.
Okay. Well, we see the curtains going up again. One last question. Bas? Yeah, over there.
I don't need a microphone. Just here. No, you need a mic. Just want. Thank you. A very mundane question. I just would like to have a number. That French court case thing. What did it cost?
So obviously what they need is they need a license from our software. And then we had to sit down with them and go through these four cases and take a look at the data situation and what they want to get out of it. And then we gave them an estimation about this, the number of service days, because it needs someone with a little bit of, let's call it computational linguistic background in order to implement this type of analysis. It didn't exist before, now it existed, and in between them, there were roughly, let's say, 50, 60, 70 service days of someone sitting down and transforming that idea into a component that, on the basis of our software, transformed the unstructured to the structured.
So more than 50 and less than 100K, what I read from you.
Sorry?
More than 50, but less than 100K.
Now you have to add the license of the software.
Which is?
I'm going to see you over coffee.
Thank you.
Okay. Stefan, thank you very much. And I also want to thank all the four speakers of this session, especially for presenting so many real-life examples, because I think that made a lot clear to everybody. Thank you very much.